From the KLYT Broadcast Studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect. Jim Williams with you, and I'm joined by my friend Tim Dralos. Tim, we've just recently gotten to know each other. We've done a couple interviews with some other media, and I'm glad to have you here on ABQ Connect.
Thank you. Good to see you again. It's been fun and super interesting.
Well, let me introduce you. I joked around last time, and I'm going to do it again. You're the only Aggie, Wildcat, and Lobo I've ever met. You have a Bachelor of Science at New Mexico State University, my second favorite team in the world. The only time I don't root for them is when they're playing the Lobos.
Yeah.
That's fair, isn't it?
Sure.
And then, although I will tell you, almost everybody I went to high school with went to New Mexico State, you know, trying to escape the parents thing.
Yes.
I stayed here because I always wanted to bounce a basketball for the Lobos, and I was fortunate to have been able to do that. You got a master's at the University of Arizona with a focus on image processing and artificial intelligence. AI is going to be part of our topics today and some of that technology. You kind of like watching all this Doge stuff, don't you? And how AI is incorporated into all the audits and things.
It's a powerful technology.
It sure
hopefully
is.
Hopefully can be put to good use there.
And then you got a PhD at the University of New Mexico with a focus on artificial neural networks, which I have no idea what that is, but you're going to explain that to us a little bit later. And you're a believer in Christ. And one of the things and I'm intrigued because you have this very high level of education. And I think I ask you this on the phone. Don't know if I ask it correctly, but I view people that are really, really smart, and you're one of those people that have a really high education, and they're interested in things that nobody's ever touched before. You're not rehearsing stuff that's already been done. You're looking at what could be and researching that. I think that's fascinating. But I'm also fascinated with how can people at that level not automatically see that God is real?
Sure, that's a challenge. I think that the country has been affected by various spiritual but also educational sort of trauma, maybe you could say.
I mean, well, we're still teaching evolution in the public schools. And that's not risen to the level of science, has it?
There's, so many people would say it has, and in a lot of ways it has, but it doesn't have the evidence when you look at it very closely for explaining all the things that it claims to do.
Yeah, like transitions of species. There's nothing in the fossil record. When you look at the mutations that are required for one species to become a whole different thing, I've been taught that's mathematically almost impossible in the time that we've had on this earth.
Right. And there are people who really focus on that, like Stephen Meyer on Signature of the Cell and other just very rigorous books.
Yes.
That say that the ability to even create proteins, or certainly the beginning, what they call abiogenesis, the beginning of the first cell, for example, that there's just, it's not an easy thing to do. And in fact, even if you gave a chemist all the ingredients of a cell, they could not put it together to make a living cell.
We call that God breathed, don't
we? Yes, indeed.
You can't, there's no scientist that can breathe life into anything.
Right. So there's a lot of mystery still, and that's an important aspect of doing any science is being humble enough to know that you don't have all the answers. I know when I got my PhD, I answered, for every question I felt like I answered, there was 10 more unanswered questions.
But that's one of the reasons that you continued to pursue your education. And even today, you're still really pursuing your education. You tell me every time I talk to you, yeah, I read this and I read this and I read that.
It's true. I just love learning. I did grow up in a family that really encouraged that. My dad was a surgeon in Silver City, New Mexico, and my two older brothers are physicians, and I was sort of the black sheep that went into engineering. And then I have a younger sister who's a CPA. And so it was just something that we, some of the conversations around the table of my dad, and my mom was a nurse as well. So just the medical language going around the table and all the different things that they were experiencing was interesting. In fact, I was, my plan was to go to major in astronomy. Mm-hmm. I had a telescope when I was in high school and just spent a lot of time outside looking at the various things in the sky. And my dad talked me into going into engineering. And so I decided, well, computers are starting to come onto the scene. This was 1979 when I graduated mm-hmm. from high school. And it was true. Computers, a big deal.
Tim, you've worked for the National Laboratories. Specifically, yes. Sandia National Laboratories, and that's a whole topic in and of itself. I've talked to you in the past about that, and you didn't work necessarily in a classified area, although there's some materials that are classified. So you could actually share when you went home. Well, your wife worked at Sandia too, so maybe you guys had more different discussions than most. But you know, this wasn't a you weren't necessarily in a you were in an emerging field, but not necessarily. Top secret. No, I can't tell you anything that I did today. Right. So maybe that was a little bit easier. But you made a decision after living in Tucson and after living in Las Cruces. No comments about those cities. I love both of those cities. Okay. But you made a decision to live in Albuquerque and New Mexico proper. And now you're really trying to apply not only what you did vocationally, but what you know spiritually to our state. Can New Mexico... Is it such a large hill to climb that we can't get back to being a place where people want to live and work and earn a living and worship God and enjoy this amazing outdoors and His creation? Are we so far away from that that we can't achieve it?
No, not at all. And this sort of ties in with your first question that I didn't fully answer, and that is people with such high intelligence and education, how do they not see that God exists and all the evidence for that? And part of it is, I believe that there's a real effort to deny that through the educational systems. I believe there's a spiritual forces influencing that Satan really wants to break up really many of the things that we take for granted in the United States. Marriages, families, spoil the education, this kind of thing. So I think that if you don't have some guards against those influences, then you will sort of tend to the things that sinful people do, which is deny God, become gods themselves, and just do their own thing. But also, one of the things that I've really focused on the last couple years in terms of my reading and trying to understand is just to connect the dots logically of current historical and spiritual truths affecting many American churches today. And so I think that churches are a big part of the answer to how to get back to what you were talking about, or maybe not even back to, but to take advantage of the opportunities that we have here. I mean, the weather, other than the wind sometimes, the people. And so there's so much opportunity for goodness, really greatness as a state that we've just never achieved. And as a maybe overeducated person, one thing that just frustrates me to no end is that let me get the source if I can find it, but some organization, and this will not be a surprise to a lot of people, but New Mexico this is called the Annie E. Casey Foundation's 2024 Kids Count data book. New Mexico ranks 50th in K through 12 education for the 8th consecutive year. Mm-hmm. How can that even be possible? And how can people not be held accountable?
Well, what's funny to me is if you, and I'm very familiar with that, every year they come out with that data, and we are usually neck and neck with Mississippi. But what's interesting is Mississippi's been climbing the ladder. Mm. They actually went out, and I ask this question all the time, and I'll ask it of you. When you were at the national labs, and you're in New Mexico, there's national labs in California, there's national labs in Colorado, I understand.
Tennessee.
Yeah. Were you able to communicate with those scientists while you were working on things and find out what they're doing, and then they were willing to lend you or share with you technology and information that they had so that you could do a better job at your job? Did that happen?
Sure. Yeah.
Why are New Mexico politicians, like we have a homeless issue, we have a crime issue. How come we're not going, we have an education issue, obviously, that you're talking about right now. Why don't we go to states that have a handle on these things, like even Mississippi? They've started to climb the ladder. They're not where they want to be, but I think they're up above, you know, 30th now in the country, and they used to be at the very bottom like we are. But I hear it happen so many times, or I hear it said so many times. We're at the bottom of every good list and at the top of every bad list. Right. And boy, I think we can change it. Do you agree?
I 100% agree. And again, I'll just emphasize that I can do my part, you can do your part, but I truly believe that churches who are led by pastors, and of course, many boards of elders, that the churches are the key. And this is part of, I believe, what Satan and his minions have done across the country, across the world, but certainly in this state, is convince church leaders that that politics is a bad word.
And I'm putting you on the spot here. You're saying that a large part of why we're in the position we're in is because the church hasn't taken its responsibility to do what it needs to do.
Yes, I believe that very much to be true, that we're all familiar with sins of commission, sins that we commit, whether it's lying or stealing or murdering or whatever, then there's sins of omission. And I think this is a huge sin of omission of churches to not consider their responsibility for all of the victims in this state. And one of them is 350,000 people associated with the public schools in New Mexico. Now, that includes teachers and students and staff and the whole thing. But again, to be 50th for 8 years in a row without accountability is terrible. And how do you hold government people accountable? It's through elections. And so just real quickly, I have some notes here just for the audience. November 4th of this year, 2025, there will be a school board election in districts 3, 6, and 7. There'll be an election for a new mayor of Albuquerque and city council districts 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9. And then the year after, of course, in 2026, the new governor and legislature.
When should we as a community begin researching who's running for these? Because a lot of people have already announced. When should we start researching and looking into what these people believe and what they espouse and both their philosophy and their beliefs?
Well, I think there's
should we wait till November 1st? Because we are the Mañana state, right?
That's right.
Hey, answer that question when we come back. We're with Tim Dralos. He is a retired engineer from Sandia National Laboratories and a Christian person just asking the same questions. He's a grandpa. We have the same number of grandchildren we share that we both lived in Silver City for a time, which I don't know a lot of people that have lived in Silver City. My dad did his master's there. Your dad was a physician. And so I appreciate the commonalities, but I really appreciate that you are looking into these matters and are willing to share with us your perspective. So we'll be back with Tim right after these messages. Stay with us.
ABQ Connect.
Thank you to Tayshawn engineering the program today, taking us off the air, to our sponsors, and we do appreciate them very much. We appreciate him bringing us back. I'm with Tim Dralos. This is Jim Williams hosting ABQ Connect today, and Tim is a retired engineer, long career with Sandia National Laboratories, knows a lot about artificial intelligence and neural networks. Tim, during the break there, we were just talking, and I'm going to kind of give you the ball and let you run, because you kind of feel like there's, I don't know how you worded it, four aspects to a spiritual problem that we're experiencing both in our country and in our state.
Yes. My interest really in recent years is to understand the forces, including spiritual forces, describing why countries rise and fall, and then you can take that down to the state level and just try to see what's going on from a spiritual dimension. And so I've have a four-part assessment of spiritual forces operating in America, and in particular New Mexico, and I'll just quickly name the four, and then we can talk about some of these in more detail. But one, which won't be a surprise to this audience, is humans have a spiritual dimension. There are many, we sort of talked about them earlier, whether it's in the scientific community, who don't acknowledge God at all. And even if they do, maybe they don't believe that there's any really spiritual forces or spiritual elements working in their life.
I don't want to be flippant about this, but I know married people, which I'm not one of those, that almost shut off some senses in regard to their spouse. And what I mean by that is, you know, maybe you're always after your wife to do a certain thing, and then she just shuts off that hearing. She doesn't hear you when you're doing that. Now, it's almost like a defense mechanism, but she's turning off a sense. Hmm. And I get the sense that a lot of people turn off the spiritual sense that they have.
Yes, I think that's good. I believe we have a physical dimension, we have a mental, emotional dimension, and we have a spiritual dimension. And which is the core of our spiritual dimension, is dead until we become born again.
Are any of those in opposition? In other words, if you have a high intellect, is that in opposition to you having a relationship with Christ?
No, not at all, because God is the most amazing creator physically and intellectually, and really God has all the answers. And it's through that relationship that... And I have to say this, too, about sort of intellectual things. It can take you away from some of those emotional senses, if you will. And you sort of care more about either winning an argument, this kind of thing, than you really do the relational part. So that's been an important thing for me to understand and try to develop in my spiritual walk.
I love it. I love it.
So number one was that we humans have a spiritual dimension, not a big deal, again, to too many people. Number two, there is an evil influencer of humans in the world. And this shouldn't be a surprise, but there, I believe, are too many pastors, churches, and seminaries who don't believe in a real Satan. And this isn't a being that any Christian should ever fear at all, because greater is he who is in us than he who is in the world. And what I'm trying to communicate here is that there is an influence, and we are all susceptible to being influenced by the different names: the evil one, tempter, murderer, enemy, adversary, accuser, deceiver, and the father of lies. So lies are something that we're very familiar with in this day and age, with communication being so ubiquitous. It's, you know, there's even the center of disinformation, I think, for a while under the Biden administration. So it's crucial that individuals and churches continually put on the whole armor of God, Ephesians 6. So number three is that Satan influences humans and leverages institutions with his lies. And I see those playing out here in New Mexico.
Now, you said leveraging institutions.
Yes.
So the influencer, which is the second thing you mentioned, is influencing individuals. And the third one is he's influencing institutions.
I believe so through people. Mm. And it may not be, it probably isn't in many cases, believers. Although believers can be influenced, I think, either if they're not disciplined.
But I'll give you an example, and I kind of put you on the spot earlier in the first segment where I said, you're really saying churches aren't doing all they should do. So when people form a nonprofit, which most churches are 501c3 organizations, there's specific language about how you can, you can't make the members of your 501c3, you can't tell them how to vote in an election. That's okay. Against the law. Now, the leadership can say, I believe in this individual and I'm going to vote for him, but you can't tell your constituents how to vote. Well, that's kind of been turned around. I've actually heard pastors say, well, nonprofit organizations are not allowed to make comments about politics. And that is not true.
Right.
So you're kind of talking about that kind of stuff.
Yes, I think there's a lot that that churches should be doing, and if they want to have an influence in the state, because we have we live in a country, a constitutional republic, with democratically elected representatives, and we're responsible for who those representatives are and what they do, and every law is an imposition of a moral stance. And so you're either saying, well, do we want to have laws, have a moral stance of the Bible, or do we want somebody else, atheists, even Satanists? There was a recent thing in Kansas where they did some kind of thing at the Capitol, a group of Satanists. Satanists did, and many Christian protesters were there, so
gosh,
that was interesting. And of course, so anyway, I believe there's a lot that can be done, and it's our duty. I like the illustration of the parable of the Good Samaritan, where there's an individual who's beaten and left in a ditch by a robber and an assaulter. And there's three people who pass by, and one is a priest, and he sees it, and he intentionally goes to the other side of the road and decides, I have something better to do. Maybe I have a sermon to work on, who knows what. And then a Levite, who's another, I'd call them professional church people, both of those two, and they intentionally ignore that situation. And then the third is a Samaritan who is not very well received in the Jewish community back in that day, and that person helped that
probably a Jewish person, someone who looked down upon the Samaritan.
Yes,
he actually rendered assistance.
Probably so. You're absolutely right. And so Jesus at the end of this says, "Who is the neighbor?" And it was the Samaritan. He says, "Go and do likewise." And so I believe that. Politics is kind of like that within the church, and certainly there are ways of doing, of engaging with the political world wrongly.
So you've mentioned three parts of your assessment. Go over those three one more time,
okay,
and then tell us the fourth, and then we'll take a break.
Okay, sounds good. So one is humans have a spiritual dimension. Two, there is an evil influencer of humans in that spiritual dimension. 3 is Satan influences humans and leverages institutions with his lies. And number 4 is communism, Marxism, socialism, fascism all have their root in a satanic ideology that will never go away until Christ returns.
You know, you mentioned socialism and Marxism, and obviously there's a lot of books about those. But I like the term virtue signaling because they actually sound like we're going to take all the wealth and we're going to divide it up evenly among everybody and we're all going to live in harmony and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And all of that is a lie. That's not what socialism and Marxism do.
Right.
But it basically does is put a dictator in control over everybody. So no individual liberty, no freedom, no opportunity to worship freely. And that doesn't just include Christians. That's even people that are atheists. They can't just do whatever they want. They have to essentially ascribe worship to the dictator.
Yes.
So all of this is just very interesting to me. Yes. We're talking this afternoon with retired engineer Tim Dralos. He's done a lot in his young life, and he's a grandpa now and enjoying that part of life and really researching and looking into things. I say he's learning all the questions, or teaching us rather, all the questions we should be asking. And so he's gone through his 4-part assessment, and we're going to talk more about how he applies that in life, both to national politics and local politics. We'll be back on ABQ Connect right after these messages.
ABQ Connect.
Retired engineer Tim Dralos in studio with us today on ABQ Connect. This is Jim Williams with you. Love to spend time with you all on Mondays. Thank you for being here with us. And I love talking with people like Tim because he's lived life on many different levels. National security, he's been at the highest levels of introducing new technologies like artificial intelligence. And on the ground floor of how that's all going, we hope we get to talk to you a little bit about that. And because I think that New Mexico might have a chance to even be an employer at a very high level with some of these technologies. So that's going to be in our last segment today. But Tim, you've been going through you have a 4-part assessment of both the United States, and why don't you restate all of those again and then give us a little bit more information, because in your 4th assessment, you mentioned Marxism and communism, and there's a lot of people that are conservative that say, look, a lot of stuff happening to our country today points to the exact same types of behaviors that happened in Russia and other dictatorships around the world. And a lot of us don't see that because I don't think it's happening. Well, at least we think it's not happening very quickly, but it kind of is. And you feel like if you assess this correctly, a revival of spirit in the United States could change the whole equation.
Yes, and just recognition of and that's what I mentioned a little bit earlier, of how do countries come to be? How did the Soviet Union become the Soviet Union? Because it was just Russia under the Tsars before that. And then how did it fall? How did other countries, how did the U.S., United States come to be? I mean, that's a fascinating study as well. And it is not guaranteed to exist forever. So these things fascinate me a lot, and I care about them a lot. I care about my grandkids.
Are our kids in public schools learning about how the United States was formed? Are they talking or considering any of the spiritual aspects of that formation?
I doubt it. Not in the public schools. Yeah. I would highly doubt it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part. And it took me many years to uncover truths that I wasn't taught. And one of them, I'll just go through the 4 things again real quickly. Number 1, humans have a spiritual dimension. Number 2, there is an evil influencer of humans. Number 3, Satan influences humans and leverages institutions with his lies. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the impact of those lies. And then number 4, communism, Marxism, socialism, fascism all have their root in satanic ideology that will never go away until Christ returns. And sometimes we think that after the Soviet Union fell, that communism died. But this is a quote of William Faulkner that I thought was really interesting. The past is never dead. It's not even past. And so that certainly applies to communism. And I used to think that communism, oh, it's just a different kind of economic system as opposed to capitalism, and maybe it'll work under different leadership and this sort of thing. But this is a quote from a guy named Whitaker Chambers, a former communist who wrote a book called Witness. And this was his quote. This really impacted me years ago to think about communism differently. And I think it applies to Marxism and socialism and fascism as well. Here's his quote. The problem of communism is not an economic problem. The problem of communism is the problem of atheism. It is not new. It is, in fact, man's second oldest faith. Its promise was whispered in the first days of the creation under the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You shall be like God. It is the great alternative faith of mankind. Like all great faiths, its force derives from a simple vision. Other ages have had great visions. They have always been different visions of the same vision, the vision of God and man's relationship to God. The communist vision is the vision of man without God. And that's the key that can impact a society for ill. That has an effect on our spiritual condition. And I believe this country was founded under God. And it takes, as Ben Franklin said to the woman who asked him about what they had been doing about the Constitutional Convention, he said, "Well, what have you created?" she asked. He said, "A republic, if you can keep it." And so it takes eternal vigilance to maintain the country that we have. And with these four elements of this assessment that I've done, I believe there are spiritual forces. There are people who are influenced by their own sinfulness, by Satan, to destroy this country. Even Abraham Lincoln warned that if the country were to be destroyed, it would not be from without, but rather from within. And he said this: "As a nation of freemen, we must live through all time or die by suicide." Because even back then, most people recognized we were not going to be defeated militarily. So it was going to come through some other influences. And even the early onset of the Soviet Union in the 1930s, 1940s, they were sending people to the U.S. not to attack us militarily, but to infiltrate churches. There were communist spies, is probably a better word, infiltrators who were assigned to schools to affect the schools, to affect the entertainment industry, to affect churches. And there's quotes from a guy named Paul Kengor, wrote a book called The Devil and Karl Marx, and it just has a ton of quotes from former communists saying that, yeah, I was assigned to the Methodist Church to get into seminary, to affect their doctrine.
So there were actual operatives.
Yes, absolutely.
That were
hundreds
going into these institutions to try to, you know, undermine whatever their central purpose was.
Indeed, yeah. So that's been going on for decades. And what I see is we're sort of seeing the outcome of that. And it's really, really disheartening to see how successful that has been over the years. There's a guy from the church's perspective, they've been almost evangelized to a different doctrine, a different mentality about even the Bible. Is the Bible even true? I remember when I was a member of a Methodist church here in town, sent to be trained on teaching a particular class, sat around a table with a guy who had just graduated from seminary. He didn't even believe in the resurrection. This would have been in the late 1990s. And it's not as uncommon as we like to think, unfortunately. So I think they've been very successful. And the guy named Seth Gruber, he has a name. He calls it the Great Commission flipped upside down. And so I think there are too many evangelicals, and I'm sure Catholics as well, practically speaking, working on behalf of the atheist world as evangelists or missionaries in churches to convert true believers and move church doctrine away from the biblical positions. So I'm just trying to sketch out in my own mind what is going on here. And there's a spiritual element to it. And then there's individual people who are sort of being influenced and then taking that torch with inside churches and trying to make that impact and make themselves look good, virtue mm-hmm. signaling, mm-hmm. and so on.
Well, as you're talking, I'm thinking about, we just finished a New Mexico legislative session, 60 days. I think about the criticism that I see daily for the governor of the state of New Mexico. And so I think there's people at home right now going, oh, that Tim's right on. You know, we've got this problem and this problem and this problem. I don't think the problems are difficult to discern. The answer, though, seems to me to have to start with a spiritual thing that Christians need to be doing, namely, how many of us are actively praying for our governor? How many of us are actually thankful for and praying for our legislators, even though we may disagree with a lot of them? And I'll tell you what changed my perspective. So I spent probably 4 days up at the legislative session during the 60-day session. And I had a chance to interview several people that were not believers, obviously on a side, on the other side of the aisle from me politically. But what was really refreshing is I really enjoyed those people. They were very nice. They were very kind. So immediately it's like God brought to my mind, be thankful that these people are serving, because I have a purpose for them in serving. Everybody up there is not up there because they got elected. God is not surprised any of those people are serving. So to me, our first responsibility is to begin to pray for God to be able to get a hold of their hearts and to be... Criticism is easy for anybody. Like I tell people that want to come on the show all the time, Steve Ryman kind of taught me this, who hosts the show 4 days a week. This is not a complaint place. This is a place where you can say, hey, this is an issue. These are the answers we would propose. Now, are those answers always right? Not necessarily, but I don't think you're ever wrong praying for. And even Jesus said it in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. He said, you've heard it said you should love your neighbor and hate your enemies. I say to you, you should love your enemies. Well, and I'm not calling our legislators our enemies. These are people that we may disagree with, and they may have different lifestyles and different things. But we have to love them. We have to pray for them and really sincerely want God to get a hold of them. And I think it's got to start there.
Indeed. Yes. I have a list of 7. 7 things that I put together in a proposal for a church that I was trying to encourage along these lines. And number one was prayer. No question. I had praying for even identifying or understanding the evil policies in New Mexico. Most people don't have time to consider a lot of this. They just assume that their legislators are doing the right thing sometimes, but then there's praying for the individual leaders that are in place, praying for people maybe to volunteer to do that kind of thing in the future. Prayer for repentance and seeking God's forgiveness as a church and as individuals, praying for the victims of all the evil policies. Again, we're world renowned for our abortion policies, and it you know, must grieve God's heart. So pray for the evildoers. That's,
yes,
that may be the enemies there. And those on the front lines of combating evils, law enforcement and so on. But I also have other things, like educate and equip. Again, when you're working a full-time job, maybe you have a household of three kids, maybe both parents are working. I mean, what when you go to church, I think a church should be about teaching the Word of God. But I've always thought that the best worship services are where you're there to worship God, recognize, focus on God. And then the sermon, the best sermons include, what does the Word say? What does the Word mean? And what does it mean to me?
And how do you apply it?
And how to apply it. And that's sort of, what does it mean to me? When I walk out of a church on a Sunday morning, I really love to have sort of marching orders for the next week. Next year, maybe.
Tim, I'm smiling and laughing because, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, it's great to have free will in Christ and, you know, all these choices that we're allowed to make. And I'll tell you, I'm at a point in my life where I've made so many bad decisions. I'd kind of like it if Jesus would appear on the landscape, fire out a few lightning bolts, tell me exactly what to do, and I'll go do that. What's funny about that, though, is we have many examples of people that were in direct communication with God. Mm. The one that just puzzles me more than anything is Solomon. Solomon was imparted the very wisdom of God. Mm. He was named in the Bible as the person with the most wisdom,
right,
godly wisdom. And yet, what did he do with his life? You know, he was so overcome with sexual issues and all these different things that it just overwhelmed his life. Well, if that can happen to the wisest person in the world, that's why we have to have a dependence on Christ.
Right. We are lost without Christ, that's for sure. And so you're absolutely right. One of the things that I think is important for churches to be doing is to educate and equip along the lines of sexuality, sex and human trafficking, abortion, drugs, crime, biblical citizenship. I know Calvary did a course last year on biblical citizenship. I think those things are crucial. And I think churches sort of say, well, if somebody wants to do that, they can do that on their own. But I just think that the church is sort of the spearhead of making the kinds of changes we need in New Mexico.
You know, you mentioned sex trafficking, and I've said this before on this show. Our audience is familiar with Shelley Rep, the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center. Mm. And before I met Shelley, well, I've known Shelley for a long time, but before she was involved in that ministry, I didn't realize that we have as many as 1,000 adolescents on the streets of Albuquerque that are being trafficked sexually. Now, that is just shocking.
It is.
You know, there's a term for it called minor domestic sex trafficking. We have to have a term for that? And here's the part that bothers me above all. There are customers that are creating a demand, and that's why there's so many, because it all comes down to money and taking advantage of people because of money. And it's very disturbing. So what does a Christian do in light of knowing that information?
Right. Well, I think that it's great to have organizations like that. There are many national and international organizations that one can support. Mm-hmm. I've done that for many years. Shared Hope is one. There's just many, many who are doing that internationally. So, but it's easy to see things in some ways just at a spiritual level and not at a practical, why is this occurring in our state and maybe not other states? Certainly there are differences in all the difference. I don't know about that particular issue, whether we are worse than anybody else, but certainly we've already talked about education. We're as bad as it gets.
Yes.
Abortion, we're as bad as it gets, and so on. So I wouldn't be surprised. And so those things happen because we allow people to pass laws that encourage or even through taxpayer funding, you know, establish some of these things.
So, well, I mean, you know, we talked off the air about DOGE and all the things that we're funding internationally, both here at home, domestically, and overseas. We're funding all kinds of literally, dare I say, bizarre things that have actually nothing to do with the sanctity or the safety of people around the world. Right. They're just things that people are spending money on. And they're sinful things.
Right.
And hopefully the incumbent president, Donald Trump, and his team are actually doing something about that money. That's kind of a practical thing, but it's also going to have some spiritual results because it's going to take away a lot of opportunity that people have to do the wrong thing right now.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So that would be a vital thing to do in New Mexico if we're ever given the chance. Can I share a few resources
Yes.
that I think, you know, I am trying to communicate some things that I've drawn from books that I think have been very helpful for me. One of them addresses kind of the question you're asking, which is, let me see if I can find the issue of would Jesus be involved in politics? And so there's actually a book of that title by a guy named Neil Mammon. And the title of the book is Jesus Was Involved in Politics. And so that's a great book for that particular issue. And then there's a couple other books that have been helpful for me just studying the history of our country and how things have happened here. One of them is Dinesh D'Souza's book, The Big Lie. That's a great resource. And then there's another book that I just came upon recently, and it is called 25 Lies. And I'm looking for the author right now. I think it's Vince Ellison is the author of that book. And so those books just have a wealth of information that I think will help us as a country and New Mexicans to.
So when you read a book, if you're a Christian person and you're reading a book that's outside of the Bible, do you look for things that are easily reinforced by what you read in the Bible? How do you associate those two things?
That's a great question. I definitely do. I'm look for principles in the Bible, and obviously there's the essentials of Christianity, then there's non-essentials, and so on. So the more we become knowledgeable about those things, including the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed, we can be watchful for things that aren't grounded.
And people may not be familiar enough with those. Are the creeds are typically stated in a statement of faith for an organization or for a particular teacher. And what most people don't realize is that we as Christians are not supposed to listen to anybody, including our pastors, without going to the Word and checking out what they have to say. Not that we're suspicious, but that we just want to confirm that what they're teaching is biblical.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that. We're not ever to just take anything at face value. I find that really fascinating. We've got about a minute left.
Okay.
Tell us, you as a citizen, do you feel like you can have a large influence on what we do as New Mexicans here moving forward?
Well, it's venues like this that give me hope. Not just me being on your program, but you doing this week after week, and other churches in town that are doing the work of God. with their voices and their hands and their feet. Mm. But I have to tell you, I'm enough of a realist that I don't know what the future of New Mexico is. I mean, most of us who've lived here as long as I have, which is 40 years, I mean, I grew up here and then went off to college for a little bit and have done my career here. We've had this kind of hope for decades.
Yeah.
And so the opportunities are great, and I hope the church community will take advantage of those opportunities to help everybody who lives here and everybody who wants to come and visit.
Tim, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.